The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Glenn Beck.
For centuries, Tehran was practically a Western city with thousands of years of history, still unbothered. Beautiful spires and arches and minarets come from all over the world. Now it's mostly rubble. At its heart was the Grand Bazaar. It was once an Edenic district full of guest houses and gardens with giant fountains, corridors with coffered and spired ceilings, each emblazoned with a intricate design, stained glass. The windows were blue and yellow and red. There was a glow around you as you walked down. Now, for roughly 6 months, Iran has fought back. It's protests and insurrection in the street. Last week, the whole thing burst wide open. And this is what it sounded like to walk on those stone streets in Tehran last week. Thousands of people, thousands of protesters. They marched in the Grand Bazaar in Iran. As protests in Iran continued for the fourth day, police fired tear gas at unruly crowds, men with fists in the air. They were shouting things not heard on the streets of Tehran, at least openly, for a long, long time. Down with Palestine. Now, anytime the police fired another canister of tear gas at the protesters, the streets erupted in a scatter of frantic people, clutching their eyes, ducking into storefronts. Young men in off-brand work suits sprinted into the markets and through the backyard alleys. Work truck drove around dispersing bricks for the protesters to hurl at the robotic-looking riot police with their clubs and their shields and their futuristic helmets. And strangely, the protest just stopped. Almost eerie. A strange silence and hush overtook the city, interrupted by random outbursts throughout the entire country. This peace lasted exactly an hour and 40 minutes. Why? Well, people had to go inside and watch, you know, their soccer team play Portugal in the World Cup. They tied, by the way. It wasn't enough. The people of Iran need a win.
It's Wednesday, June 27th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. I'm glad you're here. Thank you so much for listening. So it was an interesting day to be alive in our country. Yesterday, there was some really interesting results in the primaries last night. We had the Democrat that was expected to challenge Pelosi for speakership, the one that was probably going to be the Speaker of the House, was ousted last night by a 28-year-old socialist that nobody has ever even heard of. 10-term congressman, 10 terms gone. There's also another upset in California. Same thing. Democratic socialists are starting to win, but that's really who the Democrats are now. And if you are a Democrat and you haven't figured that one out yet, where have you been? The Democratic socialists, you know, the people that are, you know, in charge of Venezuela and some of the other worst nightmares, about to be in charge of Mexico, it appears. This is sweeping Latin America. and sweeping the world, we don't even know who they are. And generally, Democrats refuse to even admit it or look at it. Remember, it was just about 6 years ago that if I said that this person is a Democratic socialist, they're a socialist, a Democratic socialist. Here it is. Here's the people they're talking to. They're Democratic socialist. I was a racist. Now they are taking off their masks, as predicted, and they are saying, yeah, what's the problem? I am a socialist. What's the problem? Well, the problem is, if reading your platform, you don't agree with capitalism. You want to get rid of capitalism. And I know the workers are going to own all of the factories. I know it's really great. It you know, everybody promises that. But as we see in Venezuela, it never really works out that way. Also, Mitt Romney won last night. And it was a bizarre thing to watch Mitt Romney. Stu, can you give me the highlights of some of the elections last night?
Yeah, Romney won, and he'll win easily. Yes. And go into the Senate in November, or will win in November. I think, though, we can't just blow past Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
No, I don't think so.
This is, if you remember back to the Tea Party sort of revolution, the moment where Eric Cantor loses to Dave Brat, it was such a shocking result. And honestly, unless you listen to The Blaze, where there was a lot of coverage about it, we talked to Dave a few times, Doc Thompson talked to him a few times, it was not covered widely, though, but even by conservative media, honestly, it was not a race that anyone thought Dave Brat had a chance in, outside of like Dave Brat's family. And he went in and won against Eric Cantor, who was the number two guy in the House. This is a similar sort of scenario. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a 28-year-old Democratic socialist, goes up against Joe Crowley, who is the number four Democrat in the U.S. House, talked about as a guy who would be the next speaker. Okay, this is a very similar to Cantor in that way. And so she comes out. She is, you know, far, far, far left, and admitting it. Now, Crowley's also far left, but an establishment Democrat, like a Hillary Clinton, you know, sort of level establishment Democrat, where Cortez is, you know, much, much further than that. To give you a sense of how crazy this result is, Joe Crowley is a 10-term congressman. He's been there forever. The race was thought to be so safe for Crowley. The New York Times, again, this is a New York race, the New York Times ran zero articles about it. They didn't even cover it. That is incredible. Now,
it's not. It shows how arrogant these media organizations are. I mean, they've mocked me and others for a long time, warning about the takeover of the Democratic Party and the Democratic Socialists. They've mocked us. They've called us names, racist, you know, conspiracy theorists, et cetera, et cetera. Here it's happening. And they don't even see it coming. They just don't see it coming. It's their world. And they don't realize they're about to be eaten.
Yeah, it does seem that way. They had the race was covered a lot by like The Intercept and things like that that were kind of have those, you know, a lot of alternative media wound up covering it and making it into a thing. And I guess you could kind of look at it the same way with the Dave Brat race there. And it's interesting. I think if you're a left wing person, you're a hardcore Democrat, you probably looked at the Tea Party the same way. Right? Wait a minute. I can't believe these people are winning. They're knocking off these establishment people. And as the same way we're looking at this now, but they, you know, I think what's clear here is what's being embraced is something you've predicted for a long time, is the people that actually will come out and admit it, that will take their masks off, are the ones that base is embracing. And Bernie Sanders sort of, you know, led that a little bit with his race last time. And it's now pushing through even more. Bernie Sanders endorsed candidate in Maryland, won And we should point out, too, that Ocasio-Cortez won 58-42. She won by 16 points in a race that didn't even garner any media coverage from the New York Times. That's pretty incredible. Then you also have, there's a couple of other close races, Clark and Maloney in New York, that almost lost but didn't. Now, the establishment did win a bunch of races as well. They won a couple of in Colorado. There were some in California you talked about as well. There was the a couple of races with interesting things with Trump-related endorsements, if you're interested in that. He had endorsed Dan Donovan and Henry McMaster in two separate races, both of which won. Donovan won by a larger than expected margin. McMaster in won in a for South Carolina governor in a more narrow than expected. But it was both cases in which Trump endorsed the establishment person over arguably the more Trumpier sort of candidate, mm-hmm. right? You know, the one who's more outspoken, comes from like a businessman background, you know, and he endorsed the establishment person in both of those races. The South Carolina governor in particular was one of the first people who endorsed Trump. So there's sort of a loyalty tie there, but both of those candidates won. So Trump's endorsement seems to carry weight when he endorses Trump-like candidates and candidates that aren't like him, mm-hmm. that against people who are like him. It still seems
well,
to
well, if
work.
You have a 90% approval rating with Republicans,
right.
you would think that that would pay off.
It's a nice start yeah. if you're running a campaign and you can get yeah. him. This is why, by the way, and it's an interesting dynamic going on with the immigration bill. There are two immigration bills that have been trying to go through Congress in the past few months. And Trump keeps saying that he wants them. He wants to pass them. What the Congress, again, Congress is spineless in so many yeah. ways. They are begging the administration to have Trump come out and say, I want this bill to pass, and it is not amnesty. They want Trump to say that. They want Trump to come out and say, the bill that's going to be passed right now is not amnesty. So these guys can vote for it and not feel like they're going to get slaughtered in the races. They don't want to be held responsible for the vote. They want Trump to take the responsibility for the vote to say it's not amnesty. So far, he won't do it. Because, of course, as we all know, I mean, when you put DACA into law, of course that's a form of amnesty.
Yes, it is.
And it's all in there, right? But it's the thing that Trump has been asking for. But, you know, look, be honest about it. It's a form of amnesty. It certainly would have been considered amnesty at any other point that we've been talking about the border over the past decade and a half. So they want Trump to take cleanse these bills and say they're perfectly fine. Trump won't do it. And we don't know yet why or whether he'll get on that bandwagon eventually.
I think that Donald Trump, if we are to take him at his word on this, would probably do DACA and would grant even amnesty if the border were secure.
Right. And that's what the bill, I would say, attempts to do. It doesn't go as far as full amnesty, but it goes as far as giving a lot to the left when it comes to the border. But he gets a border wall. He gets extra troops. He gets some of the other things he's been asking for.
But you know what? I would say that he could sign that bill as long as nothing else was enacted until the wall and the security was finished. So in other words, you don't yeah. get DACA. I've signed the agreement. When these things are finished, mm-hmm. you get that.
And honestly, that goes back to, it's very similar to many of the comprehensive immigration reform
yes.
plans yes. we've seen in the past.
Yes.
But going back to George W. Bush
yes.
In the mid-2000s, to Jeb Bush, to Marco Rubio, to all these guys that got torched in primaries because they were soft on the border.
But
it's a very similar agreement.
Yes.
And that might be why Trump is hesitant to endorse it.
Right. And I think it is a kiss of death. But people are willing to talk about it because they believe that Donald Trump will stop the border. He will build a wall or a fence. They believe him. And as long as he signs something that says, you get this when I get that, or unfortunately, I think people will accept Yes, we're funding, and it says shall build a fence. I think people will give him the benefit of the doubt. I don't think that that will work out to his advantage. But people didn't believe George W. Bush. They didn't believe anybody else. They thought that they were the typical politician. They don't believe that Donald Trump is the typical politician. And so they will give him the benefit of the doubt because he's done some good things.
And look, he's got his big 90% approval rating, and the congressmen believe, not that they don't care if it's actually amnesty. They just want Trump to take that away from them. They want Trump to say it's not. They don't even care if Trump believes it. They just want Trump to be on record saying this bill is not amnesty. And then they can go and say, look, even Donald Trump said it wasn't amnesty. That's all they want. It's so pathetic. It's like, lead. If you don't think it's amnesty, then say it's not amnesty and push for it and try to get a vote for it. They won't
Isn't
even get a vote.
Isn't this what the Supreme Court just ruled against yesterday? It's not a Muslim ban. No matter what you say, it doesn't matter what you say. Mm-hmm. It's what's actually in the bill.
Yeah.
It's an amnesty bill. Doesn't matter what anybody says that it's not. Again, the Patriot Act. It's not patriotic. No matter what you call it, it's not patriotic. The actions are what matter. I want to go back to Democratic Socialists because I think this is really important. Tonight at 5 o'clock on the Blaze TV, I'm going to be going to the chalkboard and explaining the history of Democratic Socialists and what they really mean, because this is becoming the Democratic Party and you need to understand what it is. All right. Your plans for summer vacation, do they involve your car? I remember I bought a 1969 MG. It was the second car I ever bought. And I drove down to the lot in Seattle. And I'll never forget the guy, as I'm driving off the lot, he comes back up and goes, remember, this is as is. Okay. He actually said that as I was driving it away. I'm like 18 years old. I had saved up my money, and I'm so excited to have this MG, and because it is a convertible in Seattle. I could use it like one day, and I just thought it was the coolest car. It breaks down on the way home.
Mm-hmm.
And
as an owner of an MG, yes, of course, it broke down on the way home. That's what it does.
And I had to have that thing towed to my house, and my dad said, hope you got a good price for that one. No, I really didn't. Anyway, so I've had my share of problems with cars. And when your car doesn't have a warranty, it sucks. Now, replacing your engine, replacing some of the sensors now can cost thousands of dollars. There's nothing simple about today's cars. I will tell you, there is really nothing simple about that MG either. But anyway, if you have now extended coverage from CarShield, you don't have to worry about, you know, where you're taking the car or how much it's going to cost to fix, because a lot of it's going to be covered now. I want you to go to carshield.com, 1-800-CAR-6100, 1-800-CAR-6100. You're going to save 10% on this amazing service that when you go in and you have an oil change and they found something else they have to fix, you don't sweat it. 1-800-CAR-6100. It's a promo code Beck. You will save 10% at carshield.com. Promo code Beck, carshield.com. Deductible may apply. Yeah. Democratic Socialists, something that you need to know, they have really been called progressives for a long time. The Progressive Caucus is really full of Democratic Socialists. I'm going to explain tonight on television, but I also want to give you a little bit of a highlight of this because they are going to become more and more important. What is a Democratic Socialist? Well, a Democratic Socialist was really Mikhail Gorbachev, the guy who brought down communism. A Democratic Socialist really is what all of the communists became in Germany and in the former Soviet Union. They just took off their uniform and said, yeah, we reject the Stalinist thing. We're Democratic Socialists. Well, I want you to hear a little bit about the Democratic Socialists from their own website and in their own words, and see if you think this is what the American people are. You might be surprised because have a new Frank Luntz poll out. It shows how many people really think we should live in a democracy, and it's important.
Glenn,
coming up next.
Back. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So the Democratic Socialists are now taking off their masks. Remember just a few years ago, if I said that a lot of people around the president were Democratic Socialists, I was, of course, called a racist for pointing that out. It was racist to call people socialists just a few years ago. Well, now it's not. Now it's becoming very, very popular. And in fact, we had two major upsets last night with Democratic Socialists winning. So who are the Democratic Socialists? Because Democratic Socialist sounds really neat. I mean, you know, wow, well, it's a new kind of idea. You know, we all get to vote on which companies we own. Well, it doesn't usually work that way. Ask Venezuela. But let me describe the Democratic Socialists using their own words. We are socialists because we reject an economic order based on private property and profit. Okay, wait a minute. An economic order based on private profit. So if I put all of my money into an idea and it makes money, that profit is not mine. That profit belongs to the state and to the people. They reject an economic order based on private profit, alienated labor, gross inequalities of wealth and power, discrimination based on race, sex, sexual orientation, gender expression, disability status, age, religion, national origin, and brutality and violence in defense of the status quo. Notice it's only violence and brutality in defense of the status quo, which is the capitalist system. In defense of. We are socialists because we share a vision of humane social order based on popular control of resources and production, economic planning, equitable distribution, feminism, racial equality, and non-oppressive relationships. Well, how are you going to do that without oppressing someone else? We are socialists because we are developing a concrete strategy for achieving that vision, for building a majority movement that will make democratic socialism a reality in America. We believe that such a strategy must acknowledge the class structure of American society, and that this class structure means that there is a basic conflict of interest between those sectors with enormous economic power and the vast majority of the population. This is populism here. And what they're saying here is, well, if we get enough people to be the majority, then we can go get them and their stuff. Now, how are you going to do that? How are you going to do that? You're going to tax it, or you're going to take it. You're going to remove people from their positions by either convincing them all of a sudden that there is no such thing as private profit, which will not happen in a capitalist country, at least for some. You will have to either shut them down, you know, arrest them, kill them, whatever it is. You're going to have a whole lot of people who say, no, I don't believe in that. So the class structure has to be changed. Well, how are you going to do that? Now, the DSA, the Democratic Socialists of America, will say, no, we're not like Stalin. We're not communists. However, their own websites say that they are a big tent and multi-tenancy organization. What does that mean? Well, look up Wikipedia. On Wikipedia, Democratic Socialists of America, they explain what that means. The members express a wide range of socialist and anti-capitalist views. Well, if you're anti-capitalist, then you're going to have a revolution, because we are a capitalist country. DSA members have wide-ranging views, from eco-socialism, so in other words, the planet is primarily much more important than humans are. Democratic socialism, that's what the Soviet Union is now in places like Venezuela. revolutionary socialism, which is the opposite of progressivism. The only thing that is different between progressivism, the roots of progressivism, and democratic socialism is the democratic socialists said that we should have revolution, and the progressives said, no, let's just do it one piece at a time. Libertarian socialism, which makes no sense to me, and Marxist-Leninism. Well, if your members include Marxist and Leninist, you can't then say we reject Marxist, Leninist, and Stalins. You can't do that. Something else that's really interesting to me is the Democratic Socialists of America also have a Religion and Socialism Board and Committee. And they are the ones that are connecting your faith with socialism. Now, this is liberation theology. Liberation theology is a lie. It's a lie. Liberation theology means we can't all be liberated unless we are all liberated. If you're not part of a liberation movement, then you can't go to heaven. You can't redeem your soul. You can't do any of these things. Nothing can be done as an individual. That is a lie and turns the gospel upside down and on its head. That is being preached here. But if you look at what the progressives wanted and what the communists wanted, remember, progressives are communists without the revolution. I'm talking historically. The communists got together and the fascists at the time, and they said, look, we all agree on socialism, but is the new system going to be fascistic or is it going to be communist? Well, when they saw the communists go at it, they thought it was great. And they actually thought Hitler was great, you know, until Hitler started to go off the rails some. For some reason, which I'll explain later, they didn't want to expose the Soviets, who killed far more people in their gulags than Hitler did. And Mao, who killed far more people than even Stalin did. So if you were going to change America, there does come a point to where you've changed enough of it. But once you get to that point, that final step, it's going to get ugly. Because there are other people who are just kind of going along going, wait a minute, I don't want that. And I think that's what's happening again in the country. What they're feeling is, wait, I don't like this mob mentality. I don't like the Twitter police. I don't like the university saying you can't be heard. But not enough people take it seriously because we've never seen it in our country before. But if you're going to dismantle the United States of America, how do you do it? Well, you need a few things. You need school. You need the universities. You need the religious organizations. You need pop culture. You need art. You need those things. The military and the structure you can take later. But you have to have those things unless you're going to be in revolution. But as soon as you have a revolution, you need to grab these things to train the people. So the progressives allowed these institutions to be grabbed over 100 years ago. How do you destroy the Constitution? It's really easy. You don't teach it anymore. You don't teach civics anymore in school. You don't teach what it means to be an American and why our system of government is better. It's not the best. I mean, universally speaking, planetary, it is. It has provided more freedom and more benefit than anybody else. As soon as there's a better one that comes along, I'll look at it. But it has to provide better freedom. So first thing you have to do is make sure you get them young. In the schools, don't teach them history. Don't teach them American history. You can teach them replacement history, which is all of the things that make America look bad and the founders look bad. But definitely don't teach the Bill of Rights. Don't teach any kind of civics, what it means to be a good citizen. When you get to the universities, how do you kill the Constitution? Well, by the time you get to the universities, they have to do a couple of things. They have to stop teaching history, American history, entirely. And that's happening. Then on the other hand, the other thing you have to do is you also have to replace it. Well, that's why you have all of your Marxist and your postmodernist professors now in the universities. And what are they teaching? The kids have not been taught about communism. They have not been taught about the American system. The younger kids are taught a bunch of garbage. Then they're taught not to think. 2 + 2 = 6. Well, how'd you get there, Johnny? Oh, well, that sounds like it's good. Yeah, okay. I'm going to give you the point. You're not hearing about critical thinking at all, and right and wrong. Don't say they're wrong. I'm sorry, there is right or wrong. So when you get to college, you have them ready now to pour in all kinds of garbage. And the popular culture, that has to just undermine the American ideals. It has to mock the American ideals. It has to push neo-Marxist, anti-capitalist, postmodernist eco systems as much as it possibly can. In religion will, man will always let you down. So religion has just been discrediting itself for a while. But you have to get into the religion if you're thinking 100 years ago. You have to get in with something, and they did. Social justice and liberation theology. And that allowed them to say, the church. Now, why would a socialist, democratic socialist of America that is concentrating on the youth that doesn't believe in God, why would they be preaching liberation theology and have a whole council on socialism in religion? There's been a cultural revolution going on in America, and nobody's been willing to see it or say it, but that is what has happened to us. There's a cultural revolution that was done without the gulags of Mao, without the gulags of Stalin, without the disappearing of people under Che. Look what popular culture has done. They have erased or made people like Abraham Lincoln or Thomas Jefferson or George Washington. They've either erased them or discredited them. While we're selling in our stores pictures of Che and Mao. Democrats, you need to wake up, because you have you're now in a socialist organization. And maybe you're for that. The latest poll, percentage of Americans who say it is absolutely important to live in a democracy. 18 to 25, 34%. 18 to 29, 39%. So you're talking under 39% if you are under 30. Age 30 to 39, 55%. 40 to 49, 59%. 50 to 64, 68. 65 plus, 77%. This new generation that is coming up, they are embracing democratic socialism because they don't know what it means, and because we have had nothing else. They don't even know that it's important to live in a democracy. More on this tonight at 5 o'clock, only on the Blaze TV. You don't want to miss it. Plus, I get into Google and the connections to Barack Obama and the news and what it's going to mean. Holy cow, wait until you see this. All right, I want to talk to you a little bit about American financing. Most people create household budgets because they want to take back control of their personal finances. And the desire is often driven by some particular goal. It's reducing debts, or I want to save more money, or I want a down payment on a home or a home improvement project. Budgeting is smart and it's an easy way to achieve savings, but it's not the only solution if you're a homeowner. If you own a home, you can now use it to your benefit. Consider a mortgage and refinance to consolidate all of that debt, or a cash out refinance to pay off high interest debt or major remodeling projects. You might be surprised on how quickly you can get back on track if you consolidate your loans or pay them off. Get your high interest credit cards paid off. It'll take you a 10-minute call to the salary-based mortgage consultants at American Financing. They're going to get to know your goals first. They'll walk you through all of the options, and then you can close in as fast as 10 days. Call American Financing now, 800-906-2440, 800-906-2440, or AmericanFinancing.net. That's AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
So after the top of the hour, we're waiting for the runners to run down the steps of the Supreme Court and hand out decisions that are
it's a cool tradition.
Yeah. And today is the last of the hearings, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
last
of the decisions.
One big union case remaining. There's another water rights case, but that's not getting a lot of publicity. But the union case is pretty interesting. It's about people who aren't in unions and are forced to pay union dues anyway.
Yes.
This is was 4-4 last time they went through. Now Gorsuch has been added. So the hope is that conservatives will hold this one because you should not be forced to support political speech you don't actually believe.
Now, well, this could, well, we'll talk about it after we hear the hearing. Or see the results. Also, this is the day that they traditionally announce that I'm going to step down.
Right. It could happen. So if someone is going to retire, it's possible they could do it here in just
a moment.
I don't
think it's going to. Do you?
I think we go the other way. And even if that we don't believe it, we act like it's going to happen because then it's going to help ratings. Because this could happen at any time. All of them could retire in just moments. You better stick around.
I've just been handed a note.
Oh, what?
Four of them are going to retire.
Which ones? Four? Oh, my God.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Glenn Beck.
You wake up in the morning and you think about your children. You think about your daughter, Meadow. Can't believe it. She's 18 today. 18. You named her Meadow for a special reason. You can remember how she looked like a helpless little thing after she was born, and the way the room smelled, and the ground barely beneath you as you strode through the room. Now she's 18. She's been accepted to Lynn University. She's leaving the house in the fall. University is close, so that's good. She'll still be around. You think about it, and for that moment, you have apprehension of her leaving, the excitement of what's ahead for her, and the peace and weightlessness of a father that can watch his children transform into beautiful ways. And then you remember. Today's the day I have to bury Meadow. Every day now is like the day you have to bury Meadow all over again. It's unimaginable that you're never going to see your little girl. The little girl that said, "Promise me we'll be married. Daddy, I love you so much." This is the daily struggle of a guy named Andrew Pollack. You might remember the name Meadow because she was murdered in the Stoneman Douglas High School shooting. But nobody really told you the whole story. Because we didn't find out until now. The shooter that came in shot Meadow 4 times. As the shooter prowled closer, Meadow struggled to get into a classroom just to protect herself, but the door was locked, and the teacher wouldn't open it. So Meadow crawled over to another student and acted as a shield. 5 more rounds spat out of the gun, hitting Meadow. She collapsed No more breath in her body. Does it give you any comfort as a dad to know that your daughter died a hero, protecting someone else? As if all of that weren't enough. Andrew Pollack now has to deal with this. We've discovered now that two of the men whose jobs were to protect the students that day, Andrew Medina and David Taylor, the two security guards at the school, could have done the same. No. It's not that they could have. That's what they were there for. They should have done the same as what Meadow did. The men were baseball coaches. These two had developed a lurid reputation among the girls at Stonewall High School. One of the guards, Andrew Medina, saw the shooter approaching the school and failed to phone in a code red. Instead, he just radioed the other security guard, David Taylor. David just locked himself up into a janitor's closet and waited for the danger to pass. That's not the part that I think Andrew is having a hard time dealing with as a dad. You see, one of these guards previously sexually harassed Meadow. He had asked this high school student out for drinks. She complained to the school. A report on the matter notes that both students became so uncomfortable with Medina's comments and his actions that they sought out different routes to their classes in an attempt to avoid him. Now imagine that from the perspective of Meadow's dad. Not only did two teachers at Meadow's school, two grown men, harass and intimidate her, they cowered in fear when they should have bolted into action. And their cowardice led to Meadow's tragic, unimaginable death. You know, no matter what your belief is, I think Dante and his levels of hell, I think that Dante had some incredible insight. There's a reason Dante's Inferno structures hell so that the lustful and the gluttonous and the wrathful are near the top, the warmer, more pleasant parts of eternal hell. Those sins, while destructive, they're not patently insidious. The lowest level of hell is reserved for those of treachery. The people who in life cared only for themselves at the cost of other people. There's a reason that the center of hell is literally ice cold, frozen. Because this is where the cowards gather. This is where the cowards bind in unending darkness, cold and shivering darkness. Well, perhaps the two men, one of which who hid in that janitor's closet, perhaps he'll be happy to know where he's headed. After all, it seems as though he likes cold and dark places.
It's Wednesday, June 27th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Tonight at 5 o'clock on the Blaze TV, I'm going to be doing an opening monologue and putting all the pieces together to show you that I think we know. I think we know now why Parkland was such a big deal. I think we know why everyone involved in that was so willing to jump on the stage and jump to conclusions that it was a gun. It didn't make sense to me. I said at the time, something's missing. Something's not right here. We know what it is now. I really believe we know what it is. As I'll line out tonight, there were so many people hiding so many things from the sheriff to the school district to the county to these two hiding. Everybody had a really important reason to point to the gun, because it meant that all of them wouldn't be found out. I don't think we're done with the scandal in Parkland. And that doesn't even begin to touch what the media did. Here's all of this information, and we're just slowly finding out now. And is the media jumping to correct it? Are they angry that they had been used? Or were they the ones who were using? Tonight, 5 o'clock only on the Blaze TV.
And it makes it that much more frustrating that they tried to make this case about the Second Amendment and firearms. There has never been a story in history that is more provably explained by incompetence.
This story is from start to finish. I mean, it is a great blessing that they picked this story, because this story, that you don't have to. If you are a Second Amendment person, you don't have to worry about any of this stuff, any of it. This all was incompetence. This all was people covering their butt, making excuses.
Yeah.
All this was.
There's two different people that could have stopped this.
That makes three.
We know the first one, which is the main one they talked about originally.
Yeah, but now here's two more.
One of the guys sexually harassed one of the one of the girls that was actually killed in the shooting. He had previously sexually harassed her. He didn't stop it when he saw the suspicious student approaching, but he knew it was suspicious and took the time to radio his friend so he could hide in a janitor's closet. And the only reason he's there is because they went after when he sexually harassed the students. They looked at it, found that he did do it, and instead of getting rid of him, they only suspended him for 3 days. 3 days for sexually harassing high school students as a security guard. This story, every time there is an update to it, you think it can't possibly get worse, and every time it does.
If I were a parent, I would be screaming. Well, bloody murder. I would be screaming for justice. This school and this county needs to clear all of these people out.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it is a nasty nest of vipers and treachery.
And that includes, many in the sheriff's department as well.
Oh, yeah.
The sheriff's department has just been a complete disgrace in this.
No. They've got a new paint job on their car.
Oh, yeah. Their new Dodge Challenger. Advertising it on social media. Look at our new paint job.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Really great.
That's fantastic.
What have you done?
Unreal. It's inexplicable. It's inexplicable. I cannot believe this. I find a safe space when I convince myself falsely that this is an isolated, pathetic, corrupt place. Because I think in reality, what you'd find when you really investigate it is this is happening a lot more often and and is much more spread out around the country than we realize. I mean, they're talking about one of these security guys making $18,000 a year. And it's like, well, you pay somebody $18,000 a year, you pay them $0 a year. You should not act as if they did. But I mean, you're paying them $18,000 a year. You are excusing this behavior. You're suspending them for 3 days for sexual harassment of students. What's the percentage of this of schools that are like this in America, in the public school system? Let's just say it's 10%. Can you imagine the numbers that are associated with that 10%? And I'm sure it's higher. It's why
big government doesn't work. It's why big government and protection from unions doesn't work. Look at everybody was scratching everybody's back. Everybody was like, look, I'm going to turn my eyes on this one. You help me over here. That's what was happening here. And what did they do? They target the Constitution. They know what really happened, but they'll target the Constitution of the United States. Mm. It is so reprehensible. I mean, the eternal price, if you believe in eternal prices, the eternal price of all of us losing the rights of man. This is the first time the world has ever had them. I just want to remind you, it's never happened until America. You think, who's going to defend them now? Russia? China? Who's going to defend them if we lose them? England? Germany? Africa? India? Who's going to stand up for the rights of man? They will be lost. And the eternal price that each of us will pay, I don't even want to think about it. I don't know how I face my maker and go, yeah, okay, I know we were put in charge of those rights. And well, but our stuff was really important. No, my reputation was really important. No, I couldn't lose my job. You don't understand. I would have had to sacrifice too much as you realize who you're talking to. I can't imagine. But at least we're trying to stand up. People who are hiding in janitors' closets. People who are cowering behind a wall and won't advance. A sheriff that knows exactly what happened and who that kid was, that will get on television and say it is the document that guarantees man's freedom that caused this. I hope I'm standing in line behind him. I really do, because I'm just, my defense is I wasn't that guy. Let me tell you a little bit about cryptocurrency. I didn't know anything about cryptocurrency when it was first. Mark Andreessen, sitting in his office, and
you are a moron. This story, if there's ever a story that wants you want to convince yourself that
you know
Glenn's
how many millions
moron?
I have lost for. There's like four of these stories.
Why wasn't I in this meeting? And then I wouldn't have to be sitting here with you.
Ugh. I came home and told you, Mark Andreessen.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
What if? Oh, you. Okay.
It's revisionist history.
Okay, Mr. Parkland High School. Anyway, so Mark says to me, you got to invest in cryptocurrency. You got to do Bitcoin. And it was like $34 a coin or something like that. And I'm like, that's crazy. I don't even understand what he was talking about. And he's looking at me across the table going, really? You should invest in this. And I'm like, yeah, all right.
The worst part is okay. We were actually interested in it, too. It's yeah. Not, it actually isn't yes. Like a dismissal. It was just, no. I don't really get it.
Right. And you know what? Damn Warren Buffett. He always said, don't invest in things you don't understand. Shut up, Warren. Shut up.
Or maybe the solution is just to actually understand.
Yeah, well, that's what we were trying to do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it was too late with Tika Tiwari. Now, he's a guy who came in because we called him and said, hey, can you help us? This is a guy who has been in cryptocurrencies for a long time, made tons of people, tons of money. And he really could explain it to us. And so us two dummies sat in my office and we're like, OK, Tika, tell us, how do you buy it exactly? He was talking down to us. But anyway, he did such a great job of explaining it to us that we thought, can you do this for our audience? And so he's developed a smart crypto course, smartcryptocourse.com. Tell you everything you need to know about cryptocurrencies, why they look to be tanking. Is there an upside to them? Everything about blockchain that you need to know. Smartcryptocourse.com. Go there now. Take this. Smartcryptocourse.com or call 877-PBL-BECK. That's 877-PBL-BECK. Smartcryptocourse.com. Let me go to Sean in Texas. Hello, Sean. You're on the Glenn Beck program.
How are you doing today, sir?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm great. I have a question. I got off Fox News. I got off MSNBC, off CNN a few months ago. Mm-hmm. Tired of being lied to. Mm-hmm. So I started listening to you. I started listening to Ben Shapiro, and I started listening to more out of the box mm-hmm. thinkers. Mm-hmm. I keep hearing you and everybody on the right talking about dismissing the Trump claim that the media is the biggest threat right now. And I would like you, because of your history background, I'm a history person, I would like to hear your thoughts and your, if you see reason firmly in her chair and look at it from the standpoint of, if someone outside of our country attacked us, how do we handle that? How have we handled that in the past? And what is our bigger threat, an outside force or us being divided from within? Because I see the media just running around lighting fires.
Okay, so let me understand your question here before I begin to try to answer it. Can you tell me exactly, because I'm not playing a game with you, I really don't have a recollection of saying dismiss Trump's claim that the media is our biggest problem.
Well, he keeps tweeting out that it's the biggest threat, and what we hear is that it's not. It's Iran, it's North Korea, it's other things. I look at it as it's a huge threat because they're controlling the information. People like me, I work my 40, 50 hours a week. Mm-hmm. I don't have time to read. I don't have time to devote, to dig through the truth. So I rely on you guys. I rely on the media to tell me the truth so that I can be informed.
Okay, so, all right. So I think there's just a matter of nuance here. Our biggest threat of a hostile takeover would be, I would say, from Russia, a country, a force that is outside, our biggest threat. As Abraham Lincoln said, for us to be destroyed, it won't come from the outside, it'll come from the inside. And so I think you're right to say that, yes, the press plays a gigantic threat. But I think, again, we live in a world without nuance. That nuance is important, and I want to address that next. Also, the results of the Supreme Court, the new rulings coming
Glenn
out next.
Beck. Mercury.
So I just had a phone call a minute ago. Said, Glenn, you know, I hear people, you know, like you or Ben Shapiro, and you are dismissing you're dismissing Donald Trump, saying the press is our biggest enemy. I think we have to look at this with nuance. The press is, now hear me carefully, the press is not our enemy. Their arrogance is. Because it's their arrogance that is an enemy, not of mine, but of truth, justice, the American way. It's their arrogance. It's the same thing, quite honestly, with Donald Trump. Is Donald Trump a threat to our society? His arrogance. Yeah. Yeah, it is. The press is remarkable. Remarkable. Because Donald Trump has said over and over again, yeah, I don't like looking at many mistakes of the past. What mistakes? I don't like thinking about those things. You know, I've never had anything I've had to ask forgiveness for. So we know who he is. Okay, we know he's not soul checking. He's not wrestling at night going, geez, should I have done that or not? He's not doing that. And he is open and he admits it. Now, I don't think that's a sign of a good quality, you know, human being. However, it's been priced in. I know who he is. And so there is this part of America that is like willing to accept that because at least he's honest. I mean, he's not honest, but he's honest about who he is. Well, I mean, not entirely, but he's just says what he's thinking. He's not even saying what the truth is. He's not telling it like it is. He is just saying the things that can get him to win. And that's what's important to him. And he said that. Look, I'm all about winning. And we're going to win so much, you're going to be sick of winning. Okay, well, I am not sick of it yet. I just want to point that out. I'm not sick of it yet. But that's who he is. And so the American people have looked at, come on, let's be honest with ourselves, okay? I don't know if anybody is adult enough to be honest, but let's be honest with ourselves. Come on, the Stormy Daniels thing happened and you know it. You know it. Now, what does that mean? Why play the game? Everybody has priced that in. I mean, have you listened to his appearances on Howard Stern? Do you think it's more likely that that's who he is, or that he was just playing a role for Howard Stern? Come on, that's who he is, and we all know it. And we all decided to turn the other way. Everybody in America, well, you know, half of America decided to look the other way and say, well, you know what? Doesn't matter. I want to win. So when the media says, how are they accepting that? Because he doesn't say he's this great saint. He doesn't say that. He's not telling you, I'm the bearer of truth. He's just saying stuff. And then he's pointing at you guys going, look at you. They're lying. And what are you saying? You're running ads. You're telling people all the time, we're the most trusted name in news. Well, that's not saying an awful lot. And you keep trying to defend your credibility when you have none. Okay? This is happening. What did Barack Obama do? This is the most honest and transparent administration of all time. No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. And you know that, but you wouldn't say anything about it. Do you hear Donald Trump saying, oh yeah, I'm an open book. I'm an absolute open book. I'll show you anything and then not show you. No, no. Once he did that, once, I think he learned his lesson. But even then we all knew he's not going to show us those records. There's no way he's going to show us those records. We all knew. We priced it in. The press, they have their feelings hurt. They're playing an emotional game. And I know this because I played it too. The more the press mocked me, the more the press said I was wrong, the more names that they press called me, the more determined I was to prove them wrong. No, I have the facts on my side. You are wrong. And so it just juiced me up more and more and more and more, because the more they mocked me and the more I knew I was right, then it was a challenge between me and them. But the truth doesn't matter to them. And this is what I learned. The truth doesn't matter. Look at how they treated the, you can keep your doctor. No, you can't. We all knew that. Oh, I'm not for universal health care. Here he is on tape. They didn't care. Well, you know what? I'll tell you, it's $2,500 savings. That's what it is. No, it's not. The math doesn't work. Now, they'll all say, yeah, well, 2 years later, we came out and said that was the biggest lie. Oh, yeah, 2 years later when it was too late? Big deal. They didn't pay attention to the IRS. Hillary Clinton's emails? Do you think they investigated that the way they're investigating Donald Trump? No, and they know that. But they keep claiming, no, 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 we are straight up. No, you're not. No, you're not. You want to gain some respect? Just say, yep, we're in the bag for the Democrats. Or we're in the bag. We just want to destroy Donald Trump because we think he's enemy number one. Just say it. You'll have a chance of having more credibility. You know why I'm not freaked out by the Democratic Socialists that are winning? Because they're saying who they are. Great. Great. It's the arrogance that the press says, I have to destroy him. Jeremiah Wright? Barack Obama? I said he was a socialist. They said that I was a racist. Excuse me? So it's the arrogance of the press that is a real danger to us now. A free press is critical, and they are a free press. However, that is changing, and we're going to get into this in coming days. The relationship between Barack Obama and Google is terrifying, because he's moving them not to a utility. He wants to make sure, Google, 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 you'll never be a utility. Don't worry about that. We should look at you as a good. You know, because you're controlling all this information and you're pointing people in a direction. Have you thought about not just giving people the information that they are looking for? Give them the information that we think is important for them to have. Oh, well, that'll be good. That is when the press becomes a real danger. Really, truly suppressing and highlighting through algorithms. suppressing voices and putting them into a digital algorithmic ghetto. When that happens, you've lost your country. You've lost your freedom. You've lost your voice. But the secret to curing this is humility. We have to be more humble. They have to be more humble. Donald Trump needs to be more humble. If that happens, we can save it. Good news is, I don't think that's happening. So we don't have to worry about working so hard. Okay, we're going to get to the what the justices said. There's some really good news and really something interesting that Stu and I talked about just the other day. It's kind of making me giddy.
I'm making it into a thing. We are working hard to make this into a thing.
Okay. All right. So we'll tell you what that is. You're going to love it. Coming up in just a second. All right. Have you thought about selling your home? Because right now is the time that you should sell your home. Right now. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com are the people that you should go and talk to about selling your home. Working with the right agent makes a significant difference in the outcome of buying or selling a home. We have 1,000 agents all over America who are just like you. Their word is their bond. They're fans of the show. They share your sensibilities. The agents are fully vetted. They're handpicked by my team for their knowledge, their skill, and their track record. They know the area. They are the best people in your area. Thousands of families have already put realestateagentsitrust.com. They've been put to the test. The results are remarkable. I think they can help you. realestateagentsitrust.com. They've already helped families who are moving to another area, families who are taking care of their parents remotely, or just helping families get the most for their home as quickly as possible. So go to realestateagentsitrust.com. It's realestateagentsitrust.com. Looks like we have another day that we're just not going to be able to get to the racist porn story.
No!
We have to get to it. It is so good. So good. I brought this to the table a couple of days ago, and I said to Stu, I read this story. I don't know if we can do this on the air. Let me just read it to you, because I think it needs to be read verbatim. And he looks at it about halfway through. He just goes, no, no. And I'm like, can't do it on the air. And he's like, no, you have to read it on the air. And no, you can read it no other way than verbatim.
It's so good.
It's so fantastic. All right. Anyway, so let's talk about the what happened with the Supreme Court today. This is the last day of decisions coming down the pike.
Yes. So Janus was the big decision, the big one that was held out for today.
I like Janus.
Janus is a guy.
Oh,
who,
okay.
I don't know.
Maybe you like guys. Him.
Totally.
Yeah.
And so he was like, you know what? I don't like the things the unions are doing with my money.
I've noticed
they keep taking my money, however, and I didn't approve it at any point.
Mm-hmm.
This has gone through the courts several times, versions of this case back in the 70s originally. And they said, mm-hmm. you know what? Public sector unions, sure, you can just take people's money. And even if they don't approve of it, mm-hmm. you can take your money for union dues. Mm-hmm. The argument behind it is, well, we're arguing collectively for everyone and you're getting the benefits of it. So you have to pay the unions to argue on your behalf because you're getting the benefits of it, whether you agree to it or not. That's their argument. Mm-hmm. So, of course, the unions do all sorts of things, like spend money on political causes that you may not agree with.
Sure.
So the Supreme Court ruled correctly. This is not a big surprise because it was 4-4 last time. Scalia certainly would have made it 5-4. Mm-hmm. Gorsuch does make it 5-4 here. And they rule that you cannot take money from only in this only affects public sector unions, however, so it's an important distinction. It's limited. But you cannot take money from people unless they agree to it. Importantly, knowing Cass Sunstein, what would you do if they said, well, you can't take money unless they approve it? You would do not an opt. You would do not an opt in. You do an opt out. Right. You'd say, oh, well, you're automatically in unless you opt out of it. Mm-hmm. Well, the court specifically addressed that future move by unions and said you can't do it that way. It's got to be an opt-in for public sector unions. This is going to financially devastate public sector unions. They're going to have to figure something out.
Mm-hmm.
That is the argument from now Justice Kagan had the dissent in this case. We'll get to Kagan here more in a minute.
Yes, but you're going to love it.
This part you'll really like. This part you will not. In her dissent, she's like, well, public employee unions will lose a secure source of financial support. Yep, they sure will. The court addressed that claim. We recognize the loss of payments from non-members may cause unions to experience unpleasant transition costs in the short term and may require unions to make adjustments in order to attract and retain members. But we must weigh these disadvantages against the considerable windfall that unions have received under the previous ruling for the past 41 years. It's hard to estimate how many billions of dollars have been taken from non-members and transferred to public sector unions in violation of the First Amendment. Those unconstitutional exactions cannot be allowed to continue indefinitely. By the way, Samuel Alito writing for the majority in this particular case. Mm-hmm. And again, he doesn't get a lot of attention because he's not maybe as flashy as some of the other justices, but he's been very solid in most cases.
They're just with the way they've been deciding, and there's been no difference in balance. We just haven't lost anything. And the decisions of the court this season have been really quite good.
Yeah, if you're one of those people, and we have many in this audience, who said, I really am not a big Donald Trump fan, but I'm gonna vote for him anyway because of the Supreme Court, it's a good week for you because there's been several important 5-4 decisions that if... Merrick Garland, and you also, by the way, should be praising Mitch McConnell on this. He deserves, he really did a lot of the heavy lifting on this one.
Boy, that hurts to say that, really, or to even hear it, but it's true.
Again, whether you think it's right or wrong, the left, absolutely, because you're going to see this next Supreme Court justice, let's say Kennedy does retire. By the way, no retirements, unfortunately.
No, he's not retired.
They're
going to drop dead in their robe.
It's probably true. But if you... want to see what's going to happen next. If, let's say, a Kennedy or someone from the left retires or goes away for whatever reason, health or whatever, the left is going to do everything they can to make it so they cannot get anyone through. And you will see a 4-4 court for a very long time or a 4-3 court or whatever. They're going to try to Merrick Garland Donald Trump. So we'll see how that works. So you could argue that was not a good move for those reasons by McConnell, but the payoff, the ends are there. You can question the means, but the ends are there with this decision this week, proving it in a big way.
Now, for the very first time, you're seeing something happen that we've never...
Oh, I love this.
...ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to go on the record that... I think what's happening here, of course, is a grand strategy.
Of course.
That's what the Democrats are now telling themselves.
Right. So Elena Kagan,
mm-hmm.
one of Barack Obama's justices,
mm-hmm.
Someone that very liberal,
mm-hmm.
several times in this session has sided with the conservatives. Several times. The most recent is this case between Florida and Georgia about water rights. I won't bore you with all the details on it. Bottom line is, it was a 5-4 decision, went the liberal way. However, it was a very strange alignment. It was the three very liberal justices plus Roberts and Kennedy. So you get the moderate, you get one of the, Roberts has been kind of a disappointment for the right in several cases, but is generally conservative. It seems like the same thing is sort of developing with Kagan. She sides with Thomas, Alito, and Gorsuch in the minority on that case. And she's been on the, if you're a liberal, the wrong side several times. We're about to start getting this thing where the same frustration we have with Roberts...
Oh, they were already doing it.
...is happening with them for Kagan.
I've read a couple of pieces that they're still in this denial that we've been in, like with Roberts.
Right.
Oh, no, it's some grand strategy. Right. No, it's not. You chose
Glenn
incorrectly,
Beck.
Perhaps.
Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Well, apparently we can't talk enough about the First Amendment and what it means. According to the annual Constitution Day Civics Survey, they say over 1/3 of Americans can't name our First Amendment. Not a single right in our First Amendment. Latest stat I heard, one out of every 1,000 citizens cannot name any of the... No, sorry. The 5 rights in the First Amendment. First Amendment. First one.
So speech, 1 out of 1,000 can actually name all 5.
Yeah. 1 out of 1,000 can actually do it. People that don't know their most basic fundamental rights are asking for slavery. That's just what it is. That's what's happening right now in the People's Republic of California. California State Senate now considering a bill that would create a government fake news advisory group to supervise information posted and spread on social media. Oh, good. So the government will be able to tell us what's fake or not. That sounds really good. The group would develop criteria for what is considered fake news and then create a plan to fix the problem. So here's why we have to talk about the First Amendment, early and often. Because a giant state in our nation is about to create a special government censorship advisory group, and most people won't even bat an eyelid. In fact, they might celebrate. A lot of Californians will nod and applaud the effort. Oh, I know that pesky fake news. It's such a problem. Something's got to be done. Bravo. Fake news may be annoying, and both the right and the left generate lots of it. But the very last thing any American should want is government giving the thumbs up or down on what can be considered legitimate news. You think we'd know the name Monica Lewinsky if the government had that power? You think we'd know about Watergate if the government had that power? I don't think so. Besides that, censorship, is really against the law. Now, the left hates to hear this, and at times the right hates to hear it, too. But the Bill of Rights remains law, and it means that the citizen has a right to say and publish what you believe, even if it's made up news, even if it's about the government. In fact, most importantly, if it's about the government. George Hay is a guy I've been reading lately. He was a U.S. District Court judge in Virginia in the early 1800s. Been reading him because he had to deal with the Sedition Act. He knew and served alongside of many of our founding fathers. He was a passionate defender of the Bill of Rights, especially the First Amendment. In 1799, he published an essay on the liberty of the press. The insane things that are happening in California's fake news advisory board were kind of happening here in America at that time. And it's worth revisiting his essay and actually having an intelligent discussion about it. He wrote, and I want to quote it, "It is obvious in itself, and it is admitted by all men, that freedom of speech means the power, uncontrolled by law, of speaking either truth or falsehood at the discretion of the individual, provided no other individual be injured. This power is, as yet, in its full extent in the United States. The man may say everything which his passions suggest. He may employ all of his time, all of his talents, if he is wicked enough, to do so in speaking against the government in matters that are false, scandalous, and malicious. And yet he should be safe within the sanctuary of the press, even if he condemns the principle of Republican institutions," small r, Republican, "if he censures the measures of our government, even if he ascribes to them," meaning government officials, "measures and acts which had never been in existence, thus violating at once every principle of decency and truth." Do you hear what he's saying here? You should be able to do and say whatever you want as long as it doesn't injure someone else. You need to be able to have that freedom, and that freedom must remain under the protection of the press. "He may endeavor to corrupt mankind, not only by opinions that are erroneous, but by facts which are false. Still, however, he will be safe." Now, listen to this. This turns the whole thing upside down. This will open your mind for thinking. "Because," he writes, "he lives in a country where religious freedom is established. If then freedom of religion will not permit a man to be punished for publishing any opinions on religious topics and supporting those opinions by entirely false facts, surely freedom of the press, which is the medium of all publications, will not permit a man to be punished for publishing any opinion on any subject and supporting it by any opinion whatsoever." So if we can print things, we can print the atheist the Satanist Bible. If we can print things, and we should, from atheists, even people that print lies about our religion, as long as it's free to do that, Why are we so upset about the lies that are being told in government? Why would we ask the government to control those? Would you ask the Pope to put together a council to control those who are speaking out against religion? I know I wouldn't. And I wouldn't because I know this country and mankind has survived fake news. But it will not survive the shredding of the First Amendment.
It's Wednesday, June 27th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So, head of St. Andrew's College, and I'm a little concerned. The guy went to Oxford. He wrote a book called "The Reformed Palatinate, the Elohiste," which I, of course, have read several times, but it might be over, you know, everybody else's head.
Oh, you're concerned about the listeners. Not yourself.
Yeah, not me looking like an idiot talking to this guy.
You're concerned about the listeners.
Of course. Mm-hmm. So I just want you to know that I'm going to take the role of the moron here so you don't have to. Dr. Benjamin Merkel, how are you, sir?
I'm very well. Thank you very much for having me.
Very, very good. So the new St. Andrew's College, it's in, of all places, Moscow, Idaho.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Right.
And
we are the other NSA in Moscow.
So you are the only university or college that does not take any public money, right?
Well, actually, I would say we're one of a few, because I think Hillsdale, Grove City, Patrick, there are about five or six of us that fall into that category, but we're one of the very, very few.
Okay. And I'm aware of Hillsdale, and I think they do a remarkable job, and it is completely different than what you find at, you know, anybody who takes a dime of public money. What's the difference?
Well, I think the first thing is, you know, there's a principled sacrifice that you're making in order to preserve a certain sort of integrity and freedom in the institution. And I think that's what you have, is that at the foundation, you have a certain freedom in the institution because you're not taking that money and tied to the strings that money comes with.
Are you having a hard time finding professors that think this way? I know of several universities that, you know, they do take state and federal funds, but they try to,
right,
but they're having a hard time finding professors that aren't so, you know, screwed up.
Right. Well, no, actually, I think we have a pretty good lineup of professors. And of course, you know, we're a conservative Christian college, and that probably defines the sort of DNA of the professors that we're looking for. And then once you have some of those theological principles there, then this stance, I think, goes along really nicely with it. But it's more for us a challenge of finding guys that are like theologically there with the academic chops that we need.
Yes.
I've noticed over the years, Doctor, that there's a...
You're talking to me?
No, I'm not talking to you.
I'm a doctor.
You're not really a doctor.
No,
I'm talking to the actual doctor.
I'm a doctor of humanities, which means I'm a physician for anything in the body.
It's not what it means.
I'm pretty sure it is.
I've noticed this sort of pattern over the years that a lot of schools in the public sphere that are outwardly, or at least were founded as Christian schools, Catholic schools, all sorts of various religious schools, don't seem to be all that religious anymore.
You're not talking about Yale. No.
There's a lot of examples. We could go through dozens, probably. Do you think is that tied to the fact that they're taking money from the government?
Well, I think that there are a lot of factors, but I can't help but think that the financial one is a huge player in it. It is such a huge, and the interesting thing is we know, of course, that the public universities obviously have to rely on quite a lot of state and federal money, but you expect that the private schools have some sort of independence from it. But what's really interesting is when you look into the actual finances of private liberal arts colleges, they're taking in their revenue stream, they're getting more money from federal money, Pell Grants and student mm-hmm. loans, than they are from tuition checks from mom and dad.
Wow.
And you don't, it doesn't register like that because the Pell Grant and the student loan comes in as tuition. But once you trace it all back, you see that they actually depend more on the federal government than they do on tuition. So if you think about it, it would be easier for them to cut all tuition than it is to cut the federal money. Wow. And so that means whenever there's any sort of string that is put on that federal money, as we saw, the Obama administration was really playing that hard. They took Title IX and applied it to sexual orientation, gender identity, and a whole host of other things, and then said that any school that's taking any federal money, you've got to fall in on these new definitions. And what you find is when push comes to shove, these schools need that money, and so they're going to change. They're going to find a way to accommodate it.
Go ahead.
It really is a pretty significant poll that I think has undermined the credibility of a lot of schools.
How concerned are you? I mean, as an outside observer, I am freaking out about sending my kids to college. I mean, I quite honestly don't want them to. I think you can, you know, you can take an MIT, you can audit MIT for free online. And right. I just don't need any of right. I don't need the indoctrination of my kids.
Yeah. And that's exactly what it is. It's indoctrination right now at most schools. It really is.
So how concerned should we as parents be? Because we're all sending our kids because, well, you have to. They have to go to college. And, well, my kid right. will, you know, they'll I think we are just putting them into the lion's den and we're lying yeah. to ourselves that we're doing good.
Yeah. We're really, I think most people are pretty unthinking about what they're doing. And then what happens is a lot of us are remembering our college experience and projecting it on to what our kids would experience. And what we don't realize is just even in the last 20 years, it has changed so radically that you're not sending your kids to receive the experience that you had. It's a different world. So I would say, how alarmed should we be? I would think very, very, very alarmed. One of the statistics I think is really shocking is from a Christian perspective, we've seen a number of surveys that have demonstrated that it's mm-hmm. of kids who are attending church regularly in their senior year in high school, by the time they finish their freshman year in college, 3 out of 4 of them will have walked away from their faith and they're no longer involved as Christians. And so,
and it's even at Christian, so-called Christian colleges that were included in that, yeah. It still is like about half, isn't it?
Yeah. I think the Christian colleges are actually in a lot of ways almost worse than the state schools because you go thinking you're getting one thing and you're sort of lulled into a false complacency and there's something very different that's going on.
My daughter went to a Catholic college. She went to Fordham and and they were teaching that the Bible is false, is not real. And I mean, it's like she came home and told yeah. me some stuff and I'm like, wait, what? I mean, it's crazy. It's yeah. crazy.
It's a scary, you know, one of the statistics I like to, or a visual image that I think helps parents to think about it is if you were to sign your children up to be in the boats on the Normandy Beach invasion, they would have a better chance of surviving that than wow. surviving spiritually in colleges now.
Holy you know,
and that's
cow.
Not something most parents are like eager to sign their children up for that experience, but we do it in a pretty unthinking way right now.
I think with the best intentions, I think. You know, a lot of times you do this with the best of intentions.
Yeah, just, they have to have an education.
Because you just don't have to. Is there another yeah. path to go? And of course, there is another path to go. Of course, New St. Andrews is a great example of this, and there's a few others. But I think that's kind of what we do. We put ourselves in that position that I'm doing the best thing I can for my kids, and then you're hands off from there. And that's you got to go further than that.
Yeah. Dr. Merkel, thank you so much. And thanks for holding the line with New St. Andrews College. And anything that we can do to help, we will.
Yeah. Well, I think the more you raise awareness of this issue and note that, I mean, like I said, New St. Andrews, we're not the only ones. I do think there are a handful of other colleges that are doing something similar. And I'd, I'd love to see parents just think more critically about what that next step is. And one of them might be they don't need to go to college. I do think in some instances we overplay the significance of the college education, and there are a lot of better paths forward.
Amen to that. Thank you very much, Dr. Benjamin Merkel. From New St. Andrews College, if you are thinking about sending your kids to college, I highly recommend you check it out.
It's an NSA website you'll feel comfortable going to as well. NSA.edu is the site.
It's just not the National Security Agency.
No, it's got nothing to do with that.
Nothing to do with that. All right. NSA in Moscow. I love that. All right. Let me tell you about our sponsor this half hour. It is Goldline. They have a brand new product that has been printed and minted by the Canadian Mint. And what it is this just amazing thing. It's the four nines, pure 99.999% pure silver. And it's called a Maple Flex bar. And the reason why is it comes as like a credit card, but then you can take and you can break it apart. And it's comprised of 19 individual bars that make up 2 ounces of silver. Now, what this is for is, case things go to hell in a handbasket, we've had Canada, the mint up in Canada, we suggested they make these for gold. They were not breakable like this. And they were they're so valuable that how are you going to break it up? This is something that you could break up. Your kids could keep with them. You keep them in case of an emergency. And you can actually use them as money and barter. It's bullion. It's like a coin, except it's a bar. It makes a great investment. It makes a great investment in case things especially go to hell in a handbasket. It contains 10 1/20th ounce bars, 5 1/10th ounce, 4 1/4 ounce bars. Each bar, legal tender, guaranteed for its weight and purity by the Royal Canadian Mint. It is clearly minted by that. It's called the Maple Flex, and it is available only at Goldline. You can find out more information about this, owning gold or silver. Find out if it's right for you. But I would recommend that you do it. I'm just not comfortable with the direction of where things are right now. I think we are headed for some trouble. Free shipping, same price as credit card, check or bank, wire, but doesn't matter. Qualifying orders also can take advantage of Goldline's unique price shield program. Call today. Find out how easy it is to own this product. It's Maple Flex or gold or silver from Goldline. 1-866-GOLDLINE. 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com.
Glenn Beck.
So we have a lot to talk about yet today. We have the Red Hen. That street's been shut down by police now. It's crazy what's going on there. We also have some more information about the Supreme Court and some of the things that are happening in the news that I think are important. But we also have new racist porn is a problem now in America.
That's a big one. Are we going to get to that today, you think?
I think we should. I think we have to talk to Pat about the racist porn. It's a story that I found over the weekend.
So funny.
And no. It's a real problem, and we should address it. It's not funny.
No, I mean, it's funny that you've delayed it this long. Oh,
yeah,
right. Story like
right.
That.
That's more ironic.
Shows your priorities,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay, I'm reaching here.
So we will give that story to you when we come back in just a minute.
Glenn and Tanya started realestateagentsitrust.com. Why? Because, well, I was around them when this happened, and they were trying to sell one of their houses. This is back several years now. And they were having a real problem getting it sold. They didn't like the way it was being advertised. They didn't like that just a few balloons were going out in front of the house for an open house. They didn't like really any of the way it was going. They just didn't like it. So they created this website, realestateagentsitrust.com. Why? Well, you know, you got to solve these problems. There's got to be a better way. And that they found the better way. 1,200 agents all across America. These people are qualified by Glenn's team with the advertising and character and the results they get for their clients. This is a fantastic site and a better way of doing business. And you know, when you have an important transaction, like, I don't know, selling a home, you got to make sure you have the best available path to success. Let these agents earn your business. Get moving with realestateagentsitrust.com.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
The following segment of this program is rated, well, I don't know. It's more of like TV 14 or R 14, but the R would be radio, not TV, but the R would be confusing. And it's, you know, 17 is probably a good thing, but then that is like, you know, NC-17, which means nobody under 17. And there's some people that could probably handle this. So I don't know exactly what rating this should have, but it's not, it's a little spicy. Because it's about the rise of racist porn.
Racist and, 17, R-17.
Well, it could be, mm-hmm. Yeah. This is the rise of racist porn. And it's bad. And oh, no. I have to read it, but I don't think I should summarize it. Would you agree with that?
No, you should not summarize it. Pat is here, and he mm-hmm. needs to hear the full breakdown of the story.
All right.
Yeah, I didn't realize this was a problem.
No, See? Yeah, it's haters like you.
We're raising awareness is what we're doing.
Okay. Rise of racist porn. Blacks on blondes. Blacked. Black it is. And other porn titles leave little to the imagination, catering rather crassly to the stereotypes and market demand. The interracial genre in adult entertainment has been a consistent hit with consumers, but there needs to be a line to be drawn between it and racism.
Thank you.
One performer in particular has taken a stand against the most historically offensive of racial slurs. Mo the Monster Johnson has filed.
You think his last name's really Johnson?
That's probably, yes. That's a name he was born with.
Mo the Monster Johnson has filed a lawsuit against director Jim Camp and Dog Fart Productions for what he alleges Dog Fart persuaded a female white co-star to call him the N-word on camera without his consent. Camp allegedly obtained consent from Connor before approaching Johnson with the request, which he said he shot down. But as the scene came to a close, Connor allegedly addressed him with a racial slur during the pop shot. Johnson claims the production company offered to edit the hate speech out of the final product, mm-hmm. but according to the court file documents, they released the scene and it still had the offensive material in the porn movie.
That's good. That only that one part was offensive.
Yeah.
So people can take the all the interracial hardcore porn, but they can't take the nasty offensive word.
So adult actress Layla Price says she was shocked to hear about the pending lawsuit. Price, who has worked with Mo the Monster Johnson and Dog Fart Productions, recalls being in similar situations where a director has asked her to say the N-word during a scene. Mm-hmm. Quote, "I've worked for Dog Fart 3 times, and each time I've said that's really not my thing, and they didn't argue with me. Personally, I don't like racism in porn. I'll play it up nicely and flirtatious about it," says Price. "I'll say things like hot chocolate daddy, but I won't use the N-word because it's degrading."
Right, hot chocolate daddy is not at all degrading.
That's classy stuff right there. That's, I mean, you would expect to hear that at Buckingham Palace.
That was actually, if you went to the Meghan Markle Prince Harry wedding, they actually did use the phrase hot chocolate daddy.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Adult icon, 3-time AVN Male Performer of the Year, Lexington Steele, I'm sure that's his first name, says there is no fiercer or harsher term than the N-word. Yeah. Steele, who is black, believes that while there may be more tension now, it's also a continuation of pre-existing racial themes. "Now people are noticing it more because of Donald Trump," said Steele. Let's remember, porn often reflects society. According to Steele, he's only recently encountered an issue with performers' use of voluntary racial slurs. "I had a girl take it upon herself to say the other N-word, the N-word that doesn't have an R at the end."
It has an A?
As an A, yeah. Okay, yeah, good, it. Good, mm-hmm, on yep. the nosy. Mm-hmm. The password is... I told her I don't allow the use of that on my sets, and she felt the need to argue with me. She said she felt that she had said it on other sets, and it was okay there. She also thought it was hot. Steele recalls, I've been a director for 15 years, and I've never had that on my set. The attorney who is representing Mo the Monster Johnson in his lawsuit against Dog Fart Productions is concerned that the Trump administration may be encouraging racism in new generations passed down from fathers who feel emboldened in their racist beliefs, backed by their president. Racism seems to flourish in the adult industry because a large segment of society just doesn't care. And that is where these abuses stem from.
Mm. I'm glad we got to the bottom of that. I was unaware that that was an issue.
So was I. But
so is the what?
I feel very enlightened now.
Would there be so? There's some level of escalated excitement that goes along with calling people racial slurs while you're having sex with them. Is that a thing?
I don't know. Okay. I mean, I'm not really sure.
Hmm.
They have said that there are laws that they have to abide by. And so no jury should be making decisions based on morality. But what they should be doing is making a decision based on law. And that law says, you know, there is no exception given to a scenario where a black male sex worker concerning his civil rights. There is no law that says everyone has a right to work in a hostile-free or discrimination-free environment except black male sex workers. And so they're starting their own Me Too movement.
You know what's really sad is that some of these born actresses and actors have chosen to make the porn industry somewhat toddy and disrespectful. I think that's a shame. You know, because it's
usually such a classy,
respectful industry. You hate to see this enter into it.
Well,
just really hate that.
Well, you're saying, I mean, because there are a lot of morals that are happening in the
of course there are
in the sex film industry, and in particular, Dog Fart Productions.
That's one of the classiest of the classy,
yeah.
I think. We've been talking a little bit about this off the air. I've been listening to this John Ronson podcast called The Butterfly Effect.
Love him.
He's great. And we've had him on the show before. But the story is about how the invention of like free porn on the internet changed all these people's lives downstream from it. Like where people who used to get paid a lot for porn apparently now get paid like nothing for porn because it's just out there everywhere. And they're filming like all these scenes, and they've gone to all these really weird like niche things to try to, you know, churn some cash out of it. But they said this is actually the way we're joking about this is a real problem they're having is that like, you know, they talk about one of the female porn stars who had her movies viewed on one of these free sites over 240 million times in a year.
Oh, my God.
One porn star. And for the 240 million views, she received $0. And the point of this is,
wow,
it's such a seedy world, there's no one really who wants to get involved on their behalf. Like, no one cares, right? They're just a bunch of porn stars is the way people look at it.
It's really sad.
Yeah, and so, like, I mean, again, like, I'm not saying it's a good thing to get into. However, if you're going to get into it...
There's no money in it.
Now there's not even money in it. We talked about that. There was a Netflix documentary that kind of talked about the same thing, where these young girls would go with the thought of this glamorous life. And there's a trade-off there where you say, okay, I'm going to do this terrible thing, and, my life is going to be ruined, but at least I'll have a bunch of cash. Now the cash isn't even there. So these girls are going at 18, 19, 20 years old on these trips away from their parents without going to school and coming back with like $400 in their pocket. And they're eventually on the internet forever. It's such a weird world.
It's so sad because you think, geez, those are somebody's daughters.
Yeah. I mean, and I
have three. I can't imagine how painful that would be.
It's an incredibly shallow observation. I admit that, like, you know, because you're losing, it's a daughter, it's a real person mm-hmm. whose entire reputation is destroyed. But there's at least a point at some point where you're like, at least they had money, right? Like, at least there was something they were trading for it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a totally shallow thing to, it's a terrible choice to make in every way. However, at least there was that. Now, there's not even that. They're just doing this for nothing.
And the problem is because the porn is becoming less and less effective to males and not exciting. 16-year-olds are now starting to have problems with erectile dysfunction.
It's up 1,000% among 16 to 21-year-olds.
Wow.
Nothing excites them anymore.
Wow.
So it has to become more and more perverse. The one thing we know is that pornography will always lead the way. It will find, it's like life. It will find a way to survive.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell I just saw the Jurassic Park movie. it will find a way to survive and thrive. And what is the next horizon, event horizon for porn? And it is...
High tech.
Yeah, it's high tech. It's VR. Mm-hmm. And it is going to screw... with our society.
It's a good choice of words.
Well, I didn't mean it that way. Pardon the pun. In ways we can't imagine. Pat, if you don't mind sticking around for just a second, I do want to talk to you about one other aspect. And your show is coming up, so I know if we can hold you over just for a second.
Okay.
And it's not porn related, but something we need to talk about when we come back. First, let me tell you about Car Shield. Your plans of a summer getaway... Are they going to take a back seat because you just had your car break down? You got hit with a huge repair bill? When you have an extended vehicle protection program from CarShield, like I do, you don't have to worry about those unexpected surprises. If your car breaks down after the manufacturer warranty expires, you'd be out of pocket for thousands of dollars. Remember that people used to sit at the side of the road and their car would overheat and it would be broken down? That doesn't happen as much because now we have that little light that goes on that says check engine. And that little light is just as bad when it goes off as it was when you were sitting, you know, with the hood up on the side of the road. Because you know, oh, crap, this could be something big. Could cost you $1,000, $2,000, $5,000. Car Shield. Get your car covered at carshield.com. Use the promo code Beck, carshield.com, or call 1-800-CAR-6100, CAR-6100, that's an 800 number, or carshield.com. Use the promo code Beck.
Glenn Beck.
Pat had to go and get ready for his show for the blaze.com, which is coming up next on the internet, if you want to listen to his podcast at any time during the day. We were talking earlier today about how do you take over a country like America, and we talked to you a little bit about schooling and everything else. But there's a new study out about how many guns are on the streets of America.
Yeah, Stephen Gutowski from Washington Free Beacon broke this down in an amazing way. There are now about 400 million civilian-owned guns in the United States.
400 million.
Yeah, we've been using, what, 330 as our number?
Mm-hmm.
400 million now. This, of course, makes it by far the number one civilian gun ownership in the world, with the next closest being India at 70 million.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's not even close. And India has more people than us, don't they?
Yes.
What's the population of India?
I think they do.
They do. And they have 70 million. There are more civilian-owned guns in the United States than there are people. Now, I think we kind of grasp that one. But listen to this. Every law enforcement agency in America combined have about 1 million firearms in their inventory.
Oh, my gosh.
So we have 400 million civilian-owned, 1 million for police. This means American civilians have 400 times as many firearms. And in India is 1.324 billion people, by the way, so much bigger than us. I knew it was bigger. I didn't know it was that much bigger. In May alone, American civilians bought somewhere between around 2 million firearms. That's twice as many firearms than every police department in America combined in a single month.
Oh, my gosh.
Similarly, the American military is estimated to hold about 4.5 million firearms. That means Americans have 100 times as many firearms as every branch of the American military combined. If you combine May and April's gun-related background check numbers, you get 4.7 million. That means the American people bought more guns in just the last 2 months than the entire American military has on hand. Oh, man. Furthermore, the Small Arms Survey estimates that the world's law enforcement agencies combined hold 22.7 million guns. In 2017 alone, the FBI processed 25.2 million background checks. The American public bought more guns in 2017 than every police agency has in the world combined.
Oh, my God.
Between 2012 and 2017, the FBI did 135 million civilian gun checks. That's more than the estimated 133 million guns held by all the world's militaries combined in five years.
Here's the thing. This tells me you're never, ever going to be able to have a hostile takeover of the United States of America. You just never have it.
Right.
Unless it's against itself.
Like a civil war.
If there's a civil war, and you would hope, if it's a civil war, that the Constitution people would be the ones that are trying to, you know, quell an uprising from the left, because the left doesn't buy any guns. All of those are generally owned in the center of the country and by people who are on the right.
It's really amazing. It's certainly, or you could nuke all the cities. Yeah, well, then what are you ruling afterwards?
You
I mean, I guess you could do that. But I mean, that really would be basically impossible, or at least the most difficult of takeover of any country in history. And by the way, I say hell yeah to this, all of these numbers.
Me too.
I think it's fantastic.
And look at that. We're even close to numbers of violence with guns to other countries. That we're even close with that amount of guns is remarkable.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.